The Celtics' win streak stays alive. They have the best record in basketball. But are they the best team in basketball? And once again, the legitimate challengers to the Patriots are falling by the wayside one by one. Dan Shaughnessy joins us to go through all of this. It's Wednesday, November 15th. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We'll call it lucky number 13 for the Celtics. They won their 13th straight game on Tuesday night, defeating the Brooklyn Nets 109-102 in Brooklyn. Jaylen Brown made the highlight reel early with a steal and a huge dunk.
A steal, and look out, Jaylen Brown, he can sky! Brown with the razzle-dazzle.
That put the Celtics up 24-12. Jaylen Brown would finish with 14 points on the night. It was also a big night for Kyrie Irving, who returned to the court, and he returned to the court wearing a plastic mask. He was out there looking a little bit like the Phantom of the Opera. He certainly haunted the Brooklyn Nets. Didn't show any rust in this one, scoring 25 points in 29 minutes and also dishing out 5 assists, including this textbook fast break that ended in an alley-oop in the fourth quarter.
Irving ahead, extra feed. Oh, a special delivery! Brown to Tatum on a rack attack. And maybe the dagger.
So the Celtics are now 13-2. That's the best record in the NBA. They have a huge showdown coming up on Thursday at TD Garden against the defending NBA champion, Golden State Warriors. To help me break this down, we now bring in Boston Globe sports columnist Dan Shaughnessy. Dan, great to have you back on Season Ticket.
Great to be back on Season Ticket, and I'm officially geeked about the Celtics, so I'm happy to be in here talking about this.
Did you think we would be talking about this team in these terms at this point, particularly after that gruesome injury to Gordon Hayward in the season opener? I mean, they had Gordon Hayward for fewer than 6 minutes of their season. We're sort of thinking, okay, the Celtics aren't going to be the contending team that we think they're going to be, but here they are with the best record in the NBA at this point, and now they're playing the Golden State Warriors, and this is seen as a big showdown between two NBA championship contenders. I'm not sure we thought we'd be talking about the Celtics as a championship contender without Gordon Hayward. Is this just a great winning streak, or is this for real?
Well, I think everything you say is true there. I was in Cleveland opening night and saw that fall and saw his shoe point in the wrong direction. I said, boy, I hope his foot's not in that shoe. And that was the end of Gordon Hayward. And then they came home, back-to-back games. They lose to the Bucks, which is a good team. And so now they're 0-2, and I'm thinking, I'm going to readjust my expectations for these guys. Let's put them at 48 wins, something like that. Well, they haven't lost since. I just looked up, the franchise record is 19 in a row, and that was the Ubuntu Kevin Garnett Celtics in 2008-2009. They won, I think, for 6 weeks up until Christmas.
And then they lost on Christmas Day to the Lakers in Los Angeles.
Yes, so this is, for a franchise that's had a lot of success over the decades, to get to 13, and of course now they're playing the Warriors, that's going to be a test, but I do think they're for real. I mean, Kyrie Irving, Chris, it's like this guy is so much better than Isaiah Thomas. I loved Isaiah Thomas. We all did. But this guy, he's one of the great ball handlers of all time. The ball is attached to him with either hand, goes to the basket. With the mask last night, it didn't affect his game at all. His shooting wasn't great, but he is just a confident player in command. And, of course, he's had success against the Warriors. He knocked him off the perch a couple years ago with that shot at the end of the game when he was in Cleveland. So he will not be intimidated by the star cast coming in here. And obviously Tatum, the young guys. And this is the testament to Danny Ainge's evaluation of talent. He's really put together an amazing team. I didn't think they'd be this good this early.
Neither did I, especially without Hayward. And you mentioned Kyrie Irving. To me, the guy that has sort of been, I don't want to say an unsung hero. Can you say a guy on a max contract is an unsung hero? But it's Al Horford. You know, you hear the people talk about him as average Al, and there were people who derided him sort of last year and said, geez, this guy's not a max player. But he's really stepped it up. And watching Horford and Kyrie Irving work the pick and roll and play off each other is just exquisite. I mean, it's fantastic basketball. It's like a basketball ballet out there with those two guys. And Horford last night, another double-double, 17 points, 10 rebounds. He shot 8 of 10, 8 of 10 from the field. That's 80%. And I think he's just really elevated his game at this point. And I just feel like whatever, you know, I don't know if it's one of these things sort of like David Price, where the first impression of Horford is just going to stick and people are just going to continue to be underwhelmed. Or are they going to give this guy credit for being the player that he is? He knows how to play the game and he makes his teammates around him better, which is something that Brad Stevens was saying last year, and was saying, hey, one of the reasons Isaiah Thomas is having this great season, one of the reasons Avery Bradley is having this great season, is that Al Horford knows how to play and create space for them.
I think those are fair points, because he's not a guy that lights up the box score every night, does not attack the basket on a regular basis, which people love when he does do it. But if you're not paying attention and you're just watching, like, you can say, well, where'd Al Horford go? Like, I didn't see him score. He's that kind of player. But then all the people that are around it tell you, no, he's doing the little things. Well, we're seeing him do those little things and big things this year. But I think folks are coming around on him now in a big way.
Yeah, I think they are, too. And again, I think he's really stepped up. I think another guy who stepped up is Jaylen Brown. He's a much different player in year two than he was in year one, a lot more confident with the shot. I think he's a lot more assertive. And Jason Tatum, who's only a rookie, I mean, he doesn't play like a rookie. He's come into the NBA sort of fully formed, at least on the offensive end.
Tatum drives in on Crab. Oh, he's a smooth operator. Jason Tatum.
Those guys have been huge, but they still have room to grow.
Right. I mean, you know, there was a complaint last year. Brown had stretches where he did not play. He just wasn't used. And Stevens integrates the rookies slowly. That was the book on the whole thing. Third pick in the country. We're like, where is this guy, Jaylen Brown? Well, this year he's playing a lot of minutes. That confidence is there. And he's playing like a, you know, 3 or 4 year veteran. Tatum, who knew that? The opposite of Jaylen Brown. His rookie year, he has to play. He gets starting time, big minutes. He's out there. He made that corner shot last week, you know, game ender, a confident shot from the left corner, and he's kind of styling with his hand up there. I mean, this guy plays like a 5-year veteran in the NBA, and I'm shocked that he was so ready. And once again, Danny Ainge looking good for the Markelle Fultz, having this guy as your player. And there was doubt about that when it was made. Folks are like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, well, after all that time trying to get the number one pick, they get it, and everybody thinks it's Markelle Fultz, and then they make a trade with the Philadelphia 76ers and trade down from 1 to 3. The 76ers take Fultz, and the Celtics end up with Tatum. Fultz has been banged up and has not been able to sort of live up to that number one hype. Number two to the Lakers is Lonzo Ball. He's had massive problems with his shot. Is this like the Red Auerbach deal that he made, you know, when Joe Barry Carroll was the number one pick, and the Celtics have the number one pick, and he trades down and takes Kevin McHale, which I believe was also at number three?
Yes, McHale was at 3. The player Red really wanted was McHale, but he ended up getting Robert Parrish as a throw-in and still got the player he wanted, which was McHale. So I don't think it's quite to that level, because there's no Robert Parrish as the throw-in in those things.
Not yet,
anyway.
We'll see what the draft pick ends up being that Danny got from Philadelphia, but that he extracted from Philly.
It is certainly Danny acting in the image of Red, who he learned at the foot of Red. So
yeah, it is. It looks like, so far, it looks like an Auerbachian deal. At this point, I have to say this. This is a guy that people don't really talk about, and he missed a good chunk of the first half of the season, you know, getting in shape. But Marcus Morris is a guy that, honestly, Dan, I've fallen in love with. I think he's one of those guys where if he's not on your team, you're like, oh, I hate this guy.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like Jay Crowder was here. Jay Crowder was hated around the rest of the league by opposing crowds, but beloved here. He just brings an edge to the Celtics. He was great last night, 8 of 12, 21 points, 10 rebounds. He can shoot. He's a stretch four. But he just brings a little bit of nastiness, which I think you need. Because one thing I worry about sometimes with the Celtics and with Brad Stevens is killer competitive, but he's such a nice guy. And when they moved on from Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder, those dogged competitors, I was like, are they going to still have that competitiveness? A guy like Marcus Morris, to me, brings that.
Yeah, a little bit of that old Rasheed Wallace edge that you have like to see. But getting in shape, in this case, is not an issue for him. When he was on the other side, and his twin brother on the other side, they were always guys you kind of feared. And to have that on your side, yeah, I agree with the stuff you're saying there. And it's a little bit of a veteran presence as well. He's not quite as young and innocent as the rest of them.
No, he's not. He's not. I mean, he's a veteran guy, and he's come here, and he's been able to fit in. Let's talk about this huge matchup on Thursday with the Golden State Warriors. I mean, this is the game of the year so far in the NBA. The Warriors come in riding a 7-game winning streak, and in typical Warriors fashion, during the 7-game winning streak, the average margin of victory for them is 19.8 points.
Yeah.
They got off to a slow start. They've definitely found their groove here. Teams are going to look at this in around the league and say, these are two of the best teams in the league right now. But I still think they're teams on different planes. I mean, you're talking about the Warriors. They have won 2 NBA titles in the last 3 years, gone to 3 straight finals. They have Kevin Durant. They have Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Can you put the Celtics in their class and in the class of NBA title contender?
Absolutely not. They are not there. But it's going to be a thrill ride tomorrow night, because the Celtics are playing at home. They got the home court. Now, the Warriors did not play. It's not going to be a back-to-back situation for them. They had a day or two off in between games. They were on the West Coast, but they haven't played in a day or two. So you're not catching them kind of soft. and I think that's going to make it hard. The Celtics can win this game. They're playing at home. They've won 13 in a row. They can do it. But on a regular basis, I don't believe they're there yet to play any kind of a sustained series against a team like that. But for one night, with the momentum they have, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it will be a great game. There's no question about it. And look, I think one thing that you see is that around the NBA, people are starting to recognize what's happening with the Celtics. And sometimes you hear coaches fluff up the other opponent. I don't think that's what's happening here when you listen to the comments of Steve Kerr, the coach of the Golden State Warriors, talking about the Celtics.
It sure looks like Boston is the team of the future in the East. I mean, with their assets that they still have and their young talent and their coaching, and Kyrie is amazing. So that looks like a team that is going to be at the top of the East for a long time to come.
Those are great comments and high praise from Steve Kerr.
Right, and I think the high praise you're going to start hearing continuously now is going to be for Brad Stevens, because this is a guy we haven't even talked about in this portion of the program yet. And playing without Hayward, how they have adjusted to not having that guy and become way better than anybody thought they would be ahead of schedule. And Brad Stevens, the plays he calls after the timeouts, the matchups, he's got him playing better defense, and he's just rotated. You know, last night he brings Larkin in late, and he gave him exactly what he needed.
Great defense, yeah. Pressure the ball. You know, that was a point where the Nets had gotten back into the game. Larkin's a guy who stepped up. I know one of the issues I think people were concerned with when they made the moves they made in the offseason, were they still going to be a deep team? You know, Brad is somebody who likes to play a lot of players. Were they still going to have that same depth? And you look at last night's game, and he's going 11 deep,
yeah.
And he's been able to do that. They've still had depth. Guys like Larkin have gotten it done. Marcus Smart has been good. Terry Rozier, who honestly I doubted at the beginning of the year, has been sort of an unsung guy. So they've still had that same depth that they had before, but they have higher end talent. Dan, I don't think there's any doubt. I know people loved the IT version of the Celtics, and I certainly loved watching IT play. That team won 53 games last year. They were the number one seed in the East. But that team was maxed out.
There was
no way they were getting past Cleveland. Like, as much as people loved that team, this team is clearly better.
Yes, there was always the notion that they were limited. There was a ceiling there, and they got absolutely everything they could get out of what they had, including Isaiah Thomas. This team, the ceiling, we haven't seen yet. They're so young, and they are the story of the NBA in this season thus far.
And when you look at their season, I think the story of the Celtics season, as much as we talk about the brilliance of Kyrie Irving and the way he can handle the ball, the Celtics are winning with defense, not offense. I mean, they're fantastic defensively. Boston and Golden State are ranked number one and number two in defensive rating in the NBA at this point this year. That's normally points per 100 possessions. The Celtics, 95.4, 101.8 for Golden State. That's made a big difference. The defense this year, I think, has surprised people. And something you and I have talked about in the past, the Celtics have had issues rebounding. And even though they're not a big team, they brought in Aaron Baines, the rebounding has been much better. They're fourth in the NBA at 47.6 rebounds per game. So the ability to play great defense, force tough shots, and then get the rebound and hold teams to one possession, that's really been the story of their season, the defense.
Yeah, those things were concerns. They were concerns last year when they had the best record in the conference. We worried about the defense. We worried about the rebounding. And those numbers amaze me. And I don't think they're getting enough credit for those numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. And just points per game. You want to go back to old school points per game, right? The Celtics are allowing 94.5 points per game. That's the fewest in the NBA. Next is Oklahoma City at 98.5. So they're allowing four fewer points per game than any other team in the NBA. That's really been the story here, that how quickly Brad Stevens has been able to get this team with all these new pieces to gel. And the hardest part of gelling is defense, communication on defense. And it's come instantly for the Celtics, which has been huge. All right, we're going to take a brief timeout here on Season Ticket. When we come back, we're going to get Dan's thoughts on the Patriots. They're winners of five straight and headed to Mexico to take on the Oakland Raiders. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're back here with Dan Shaughnessy. Dan, you were in Denver for the Patriots' big win over the Denver Broncos on Sunday night. Not a place where normally the Patriots have a lot of luck, but they dominated that game. They've won five straight. When you look at the AFC here, is this a case of the Patriots getting better? Or is it everybody else sort of tripping up, at least other than the Steelers, who are also 7-2?
Well, not to interject my age-old tomato can theory, but we are seeing that. The AFC, in my view, Chris, does not even have six playoff teams or worthy playoff teams this year. You know, the Patriots, initially you worried about Kansas City. Well, they've lost three games. You worry about Pittsburgh, but if you watched Pittsburgh on Sunday, they barely squeaked out a win against Indianapolis, which is not really a good team. There's just so much mediocrity in the AFC now. And again, as I've always said, as I quoted Napoleon on Sunday, never interrupt your opponent when he's making a mistake. And that's the Patriots' mantra now. It's as much as do your job or next man up or no days off would be the saying of Napoleon. Just stand there and let the other guys screw it up, and they do it every time pretty much. Now, Sunday, they won that game outright, no question about it. Being there, you could feel Denver had lost three in a row. There was energy in the stadium. They wanted to see their team be their team again. And then their defense went out there and stuffed the Patriots, three and out. And then the Patriots punted the ball, and the guy muffed the punt. They give the Patriots the ball at the 24. Two plays later, they're in the end zone. It's a jailbreak. Game's over, and they're on their way. And the Patriots dominated that game from start to finish. They get the help early, and then they just cut your heart out.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, Bill Belichick and the Patriots are kind of like the character Iceman from Top Gun. You know, they say, you get bored, you get frustrated, you do something stupid, and he has you. That's the Patriots.
You want to know who the best is? That's him, Iceman. That's the way he flies, ice cold, no mistakes. Just wears you down. You get bored, frustrated, do something stupid, and he's got you.
Certainly they've improved, I think, defensively. Yes. Look, they've improved a great deal on the defensive side of the ball to this point, and that's what you see, and that's what's most encouraging. They're not giving up those big plays anymore. They're not busting coverages. Stephon Gilmore was back in the lineup. They're going to face a pretty good quarterback and a good wide receiving core on Sunday in Mexico City in Derek Carr. Are you sold at this point on the Patriots defense? Like, have they solved all their issues? Because for me, I look at it and say, Dan, like, there's still not enough pass rush. And I still worry about whether it's December 17th against Pittsburgh or in the playoffs. If they get one of these upper echelon quarterbacks like Roethlisberger, who has receivers, and they can't get to the quarterback, and they're just going to sit back there and say, oh, we need you to put together four 10-play drives to beat us, there are guys out there who can do it, and we've seen it happen before.
I agree with all that, but I'm going to tell you, it just doesn't happen to the Patriots. They give up the yards between the 20s. They give up field goals and not touchdowns. They give up more yards per carry than any team in the NFL, I think. It doesn't seem to bite them in a big way because teams don't take advantage of that. They don't finish. They can't finish off drives, and the Pats are good in the red zone with their defense. They're certainly vulnerable. They don't have as much talent on that side of the ball as you would like. Hightower's hurt. It's been a little bit of a scramble in the defensive backs, but now the safeties are playing great. And I just think that there's no good team to do what you're talking about. There's a good quarterback like Roethlisberger, but there's not a team that can hurt them. There's no great teams in the NFL anymore.
Well, there's no great teams in the NFL, and to me that includes the Patriots, Dan.
Exactly.
I mean, I look at their team. The offensive line has played better. I think they've established a running game with Deion Lewis. It was interesting that Mike Gillisley was inactive there. They still gave up big plays in that game against Denver. I think it's one thing when you're going – we've seen them against Brock Osweiler. We saw it last year in the playoffs. And I think you can book the Patriots for another AFC title game, the seventh straight it will be. But I do have concerns that if they get into the AFC title game against Roethlisberger, and that game happens to be in Pittsburgh, you know, he can make plays against him. And if you get into – we saw it in the Super Bowl, right, with Matt Ryan, who was the MVP last year. If you get a hot Carson Wentz there – you know, he can make plays. I don't want them to get lulled into sort of a false sense of security here that you can give up these big plays and just, you know, stop the other team inside the 20. Because we know with Belichick and Brady, they're going to be in the AFC title game. They'll get to that Final Four. But in years past, they've gotten tripped up when they've had situations and issues that were not addressed or fixed during the year. And suddenly now you're playing like the real teams. You know, when you get down to the Final Four, like everybody's good.
I understand that's all true, but the real teams, in my view, will do what they always do and make the wrong decision at the end, like Atlanta did last year, like Pete Carroll did 2 years ago. So all that's true. Patriot fans should not be as cocky as they are. The team is not that great. But all this other stuff, these demons that come in to haunt the other teams, it comes into play. I believe in it now, and I believe they will be home throughout the playoffs, as they always are. They have won three road playoff games in the entire totality of this 17-year reign. Three road playoff games because they don't have to do it. They put themselves in position. So what we're going to see in the next month when they go to Pittsburgh, that's going to be the game that assures that they don't have to go on the road in the playoffs, which they never can do, they never want to do, and they earn that. But if they earn that again, I think they will, they get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that game's huge. Obviously, that looms large. Steelers are on Thursday Night Football against the Titans. That's a big game. They have the Packers left at Bengals versus the Ravens. Oh, yeah. That leads into that big game against the Patriots, and then they finish the season up with the Texans and the Browns. So that's not really a very difficult schedule for the Steelers. I would say the Patriots' schedule is more challenging. Having to go to Mexico City, that's not going to be easy. And these divisional games get weird. As much as the Patriots own the division, and they definitely do, it seems like they drop one division game a year that they shouldn't drop.
Yeah, usually it's Miami, can be Buffalo. They could lose one of those games, but I'm telling you, it goes back to what I keep saying, and this is the other, I think it's the art of war, Sun Tzu, which is if you stand by the river long enough, the bodies of your enemies will eventually float by. And that's what happens to the Patriots. They all fall down.
That's great. So what do we have? Napoleon, Sun Tzu. Who else can we get in here? Do you have anything?
I'm telling you, those should be mantras along with do your job and no days off.
Do you have anything from Douglas MacArthur?
I do not.
Okay.
Well,
you don't.
I'm sure Bill does.
He probably does. There's no question. What did you think? This is the first time we've talked to you since. What do you make of the Jimmy Garoppolo trade and the fact they moved on from this guy and that 40-year-old Tom Brady now has sort of a clear path here to play basically as long as he wants as the Patriots quarterback?
Well, I'm with our guy Ben Volen. I think that Bill didn't have any leverage in this thing, and he doesn't like that situation. And I think there was pressure from ownership to make this move. They didn't want to. They could have paid both quarterbacks and been stupid about that, but it would have annoyed Tom Brady to have the guy making more money than him sitting there. And I think it would have been a lot of money for two quarterbacks. I would have kept it. I think Bill wanted to keep it deep down, but they knew it wasn't a practical matter, and they had to do something.
Yeah, the big winners, when I look at this thing, I think obviously Tom Brady's a big winner from it. I think Patriots ownership had some influence here in terms of what they could or couldn't do in trying to retain both quarterbacks. But to me, the big winner's Don Yee. Don Yee represents Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo, and both guys get what they want. Brady gets to ostensibly finish his career as a Patriot. That's what it's looking like. And Garoppolo gets a chance to play.
Sure.
You know, he doesn't have to sit behind Tom Brady for the next 2 or 3 years, and Garoppolo is going to get paid. So I think Don Yee orchestrated this thing perfectly. And I think that was maybe something that the Patriots didn't factor in terms of he represents both guys. He has to represent the interests of both guys. And that's going to affect potentially how you negotiate with Jimmy Garoppolo when you're trying to do some sort of deal with him. Well, why would Jimmy Garoppolo take a bridge deal when Jimmy wants to play, and Tom doesn't want Jimmy to play in New England, and the same guy represents him? He's going to try and make it happen the way that it happened.
Let me tell you, Chris, it was weird to be at the greatest World Series of all time, and I knew all anyone at home was talking about was the backup quarterback who had played two quarters in 4 years.
That's great. Well, Dan, thanks for joining us here on Season Ticket. It's great stuff. It's fantastic. You know, everybody can find Dan on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle, Dan?
Dan_Shaughnessy, I think.
Yeah.
Something like
no,
that.
No more robo-tweets. That's my favorite part.
They're spectacular.
They're real and they're spectacular. That's Dan Shaughnessy, sports columnist of the Boston Globe. And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. Be sure to tell a friend about us and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. And if you like us, please leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.